If you believe, assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Now, you know what really drives me nuts is when we exercise a right and we are looked at as some form of criminal for it. Now, in California, absolutely no friend to gun owners. And it's interesting because California actually has a castle doctrine. Now, even though it has a castle doctrine, they don't really allow that into play. California's got so many laws. It is basically any law that's on the book is contradicted by another, which is the single most inefficient way of doing anything. It's incredible. It's like in the Bible where you find one side says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and then another section it preaches, you know, turn the other cheek. So, you know, which do you follow? To each his own. And you can choose which way to follow when reading the Bible. When it becomes law and they decide which one that, you know, you should have been following, the fact is that you're being pulled in every direction. So the fact there's a castle doctrine in California, you know, the home is your castle, and any uninvited intruder that would seem to have any malicious reason for being uninvited and intruding into your home, you own them. However, it doesn't really work out that way. Same thing with your property. So here's a story. Out of the Santa Cruz Mountains, just outside of L.A., there is a gun rights battle brewing. It says, deep in the Santa Cruz Mountains, where cedar trees and bramble mark a property line, it's easy to see how a boundary feud between neighbors can rage out of control like a summer wildfire. That is what happened 4 years ago to Barbara Saldinger, a Stanford-educated medical doctor. And now she finds herself in the midst of a high-priced, high-stakes legal odyssey that has turned her into a crusader for the Second Amendment right to bear arms, even if that right is just to keep a BB gun at your hip to protect your property. Now, Saldinger was convicted in Santa Cruz County in 2007 for toting that BB gun as she shooed her neighbors off her horse farm from shouting threats their way. Unwilling to serve 60 days in jail, Saldinger and her husband, Todd, a San Jose emergency room doctor, have hired some of California's best lawyers to press her case as far as it needs to go, turning a seemingly mundane misdemeanor into what may wind up as a federal case. Armed with the new U.S. Supreme Court ruling just 2 weeks ago that boosted Second Amendment legal arguments across the country, Saldinger, a week ago Friday, urged the California Supreme Court, I guess it was just last Friday, urged the California Supreme Court to take a fresh look at her constitutional claim that she has a right to defend her property with a firearm. And this petite but feisty woman, who has never owned a real gun, is now backed by some of the nation's most powerful gun rights groups. She says, "I'm an ordinary person, not a criminal," the 47-year-old Saldinger said, the other day, as she walked her property, horse lazily wandering about in their pens, and she says, "What I did that day is legally protected activity." So stay tuned. Right after the break, we're going to get into exactly what she did. You're going to want to listen to this. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. Now, we're talking about this lady, Dr. Saldinger, up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, who defended her property with a BB gun. Now, here is the other side of the story. It isn't exactly the Hatfields versus the McCoys, but the owner of the adjacent property didn't appear to think much of the Saldingers or their version of the events, nor do sheriff's deputies and prosecutors, of course, because they're all going to be anti-gun, who charged Saldinger with a variety of misdemeanors and took her to trial in Santa Cruz, where a jury convicted her on one count of brandishing an imitation weapon. Why that is a crime, I don't know. Is that like eating imitation butter? I don't get it. In short, the two women Saldinger chased away from her property line said they did not know she had only a BB gun and feared for their lives. Well, trespassers probably should fear for their lives. I think the Saldingers are simply being unreasonable, said Jack Boxham, a Walnut Creek lawyer with his two sisters who are co-owners of the adjacent 30 acres of Mount Land. Based on what my sisters told me, Saldinger threatened her with a firearm. I expect people who do that, that they run the risk of being convicted. Of course, you're an attorney. You want to listen to your sisters. You're biased. Officer of the court? What a sorry excuse. This legal saga had simple enough origins. Here's the deal. Saldingers bought their dream property 6 years ago, setting up a farm to breed horses for competitive jumping, a passion of Barbara Saldinger's. On a recent morning, she flung open the door of their barn to show off the latest addition, a 2-day-old filly named California Girl. From the point that they bought the property, there had been some brewing tensions with the Bloxham and her sister, Jeanette Magock, over where the respective property lines rest. A line of cedar trees stands between their homes and property, and somewhere along that ridge is the disputed boundary. The tensions boiled over on January 17th of 06, when Magock wandered near that property line with another woman. As Barbara Saldinger describes events, her horses were already agitated by the neighbor's workers who were using chainsaws to cut trees along the property line. She worried the horses would bolt and injure someone when the two women approached through the trees. Todd Saldinger handed his wife a BB gun he was using to spook deer meandering near the horses. An angry Barbara Saldinger ran at what she considered two trespassers and warned them to get off her property. Saldinger doesn't dispute that she pointed the BB gun at the two women. There is a dispute, however, over whether the women trespassed. Saldinger says that they did. Saldinger says they did. Says they did not, and there's a dispute, however, over where the women trespass. Saldinger says they did. They say they did not, and indeed argued that Saldinger herself was the trespasser. One issue in the appeal is a conflict over whether, under California law, Saldinger had a right to brandish a BB gun if she believed she was keeping intruders from trespassing in the future. Now, here's the deal. You've got someone who has good, provable proof, good, provable belief, I should say, that people were trespassing on her property. Okay? Good, provable belief that people were trespassing on her property. They were coming, being looky-loos on or about the property line. Now, Magock, court papers say, later testified that Saldinger was holding a gun and screaming, "If you come on my property again, I'm going to shoot you." Now, Saldinger counters by saying, "I didn't display the thing. I didn't point it, wave it above my head. I thought I was showing a reasonable insistence they not come back." The neighbors, however, called the sheriff's office, and deputies descended on the horse farm, arresting a furious Saldinger. And more than 4 years later, the case continues to escalate. Now, Dennis Roryden, Saldinger's new lawyer and a member of Barry Bond's legal team, maintains that Saldinger should get a new trial under the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling that for the first time applied the Second Amendment to the states. Gun rights groups have claimed in recent court papers that a woman has a federal constitutional right to peaceably carry a BB gun on her property for the defense of it. The Saldinger case is probably on the cusp and might go either way, which is why we're going to get involved, says San Jose attorney Don Kilmer, who represents California gun groups in the appeal. Now, Jeff Rozelle, the Santa Cruz County senior prosecutor who handled the Saldinger trial, did not respond to a phone call, but in court papers, the DA's office rejected Saldinger's argument, saying that there are no constitutional protections for her threatening conduct. Saldinger, meanwhile, is ready to press on, despite losing so far in the courts. She's hoping to never serve those 60 days in jail, but she said she's fighting over an issue that goes well beyond a spat with neighbors. It goes way beyond Barbara Saldinger, she says. In retrospect, do I wish it never happened? Oh, sure. But it was in the name of avoiding someone getting hurt. All right. Well, bravo to Barbara Saldinger. Bravo. So what we have now is me sitting here being absolutely confused that a DA would actually take this case to trial. There's a neighbor dispute over an undefined property line involving a BB gun. Oh, well, I didn't know it was a BB gun. I was really scared for a couple of minutes there. Okay, you know what? If I look up, if I'm driving, I look down to change the radio, I look up, and there's a bird directly in front of my windshield, and I think I might hit it. I'm really scared for just a moment because of the thump. Not that the stupid bird is flying in a traffic pass, but there might be a thump against the windshield, and that'll make my heart jump for a moment. Depending on how it goes, I will recover. This is the same thing. I didn't know it was just a BB gun. I was really scared. I was scared. Okay. Then when you find out it's not a BB gun, dry your tears, scumbag. You know, the misinterpretation and the misapplication by police in this country is an absolute epidemic. Total epidemic. I swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Okay. Have you read either one? No. Okay. Great. That would be like a doctor swearing to the Hippocratic Oath, having never read it. All right? It's the same thing that we get when we get lefties, far lefties, that pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Right? They pledge allegiance. In there they say, to the republic for which it stands. But they deny that we're a republic. They say we're a democracy. Hmm. Then why are you pledging allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands? The lefties have done many things over the last 100-plus years that have absolutely hosed our country. And to allow cops in part of that entire group of just lefty stupid things, to have cops stand there and actually raise their hand and swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America and whichever state they're in against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And then not be familiar with those documents. And then enforce laws which are counter to those documents, which is counter to their oath. They're now in violation of their oath of office. They're in malfeasance of duty. But yet, what's a big problem here, huh? What's a big problem? We need to end up having laws on the books that if they're not already there. Let's say anybody that violates their oath of office, anybody of malfeasance of duty, there is criminal penalties for that. That way, if you see a cop or some elected official or some appointed official or some official that is somehow hired into a position of some sort of governmental authority over other governmental employees, if they have any of these provisions that they have violated, we as the citizens can go in and do a citizen's arrest. Why we're not pressing this matter? Well, that's our own fault, but we need to get on it. We need to get on it and end this. We need to stop this madness, guys. It's absolute madness. Anyhow, stay tuned. There's certainly more to come. There's a shooting of an Army veteran in Las Vegas I'm going to tell you about. We'll be right back.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Have you guys ever noticed that when there's an officer-involved shooting, the cop story is always one thing and all the witnesses are always another? And of course, the cops rarely get in trouble with anything because the way that things work, especially in court, is you can take the word of a cop much more seriously than that of just some old civilian. Even though the cops, when you actually look at the totem pole of authority in this country, are lower than the citizens in which they are supposed to be there to serve and protect. Well, at my Costco store, the Costco store I personally shop at in Las Vegas, the cops murdered an Army veteran and West Point graduate on Saturday. Here's a story from Las Vegas Review-Journal. The man shot by police outside of a Summerlin Costco store on Saturday was a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point with a master's degree from Duke University. Army veteran Eric Scott, 39 years old, at the store near Charleston Boulevard at the Las Vegas Beltway, with his girlfriend before three officers fatally shot him in a confrontation. Friends and an attorney speaking on behalf of Scott's relative described him as a good man from a military family. His father was in the Air Force. His grandfather fought in World War II, according to a friend. The most loyal, honest, trustworthy, salt-of-the-earth guy you could meet, says his friend. You only meet one or two of these guys in your entire life. And Eric was one of them. Scott worked for Boston Scientific, a medical device manufacturer, as a sales rep for the company's pacemakers. Attorney Ross Goodman, which is funny, I went to school with Ross Goodman for years. He is the son, the middle son of three, of Mayor Oscar Goodman. Attorney Ross Goodman, who represents Scott's family, said Scott was one of the company's top sales employees. Now, Pastrani, one of the friends, and Goodman, said Scott and his girlfriend were at the Costco because they were moving in together and wanted to buy some things they needed. The two men declined to discuss the events that led to the shooting. Now, according to Las Vegas police officers, they were called to 805 South Pavilion Center Drive at 12:47 p.m. by a store worker who said a man was destroying merchandise. Police were told the man had a gun. Okay, so now what we have is some $4 an hour employee who's, oh my God, somebody with a gun is destroying merchandise. Great. So Captain Patrick Neville described Scott as kind of going berserk. Now, this is Captain Patrick Neville, who was not on scene. Okay. He described him as going berserk. Workers evacuated the store. Officers stopped Scott outside as the customers were leaving. Neville said an officer tapped the man on the shoulder and identified himself as police. Well, great, you're wearing a uniform. I'm glad you identified yourself. Scott then spun around and reached for a gun, according to the cops. They ordered him to the ground, Neville said of the officers on Saturday. He did not comply with that order. He reaches for the weapon, pulls the weapon out, at which time the weapon was out of his waistband. Three officers fired multiple times, killing Scott. Now, here's where the story already doesn't jive. They say that this captain was saying an officer tapped the man on the shoulder, identified himself as a cop. Scott then spun around, reached for a gun. Okay, already the story is jacked up. Anybody that the cops see that they believe is their suspect, they're not going to stand there and tap on the shoulder. They're going to gain distance and give commands. Nobody's getting tapped on any shoulder. And if the guy spins around and reaches for a gun, you don't start ordering him to the ground. You order him to drop it. And if they bring the gun up and point it at you, you shoot them. So already this story is full of baloney. So, one witness interviewed on Saturday and three others interviewed on Sunday by the Review Journal gave accounts that differed from what police described. Oh, imagine that. Four people that were interviewed gave differing accounts than the cops. Wow. With a few minor variations, the witnesses recounted matching sequences of events. The witnesses interviewed did not see what happened inside the store that prompted workers to call the police, which is really doesn't matter anyhow. Three of the witnesses, upset by the event, asked that their names not be published. Okay, whatever. Once Scott was outside, none of the witnesses saw him brandish a weapon or make any movement that would seem like he was brandishing a weapon. That's four separate eyewitnesses. He didn't grab a gun. The first witness already had made his purchase and was waiting in line for a worker to check his receipt when he saw an officer enter the store. The officer whispered something to the worker checking the receipts. The first witness then heard the employee turn to another employee and say, "He said we should let him through," meaning let everybody in line just get out of the store. The four witnesses described a calm rush of customers exiting the front of the store after Costco workers told everyone to leave. Attorney David Amsbury said he arrived in time to see shoppers leaving. He described the customers' exodus as being, quote, like the aftermath of Disneyland. A customer told Amsbury that he couldn't go in, so the attorney waited on a bench west of the entrance. He said he had a clear view of the two officers standing beside the entrance with their guns drawn. All four witnesses said they were within 20 feet of the store's main entrance. They said Scott walked out of the entrance with the crowd. And we're going to get to the details of those four witnesses after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're listening right here at 2A Radio.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Lead follower, get the hell out of the way, guys. Here's the deal. We're continuing on about this story of Las Vegas cops who murdered a West Point graduate by the name of Eric Scott. All four witnesses say they were within 20 feet of the Costco store's main entrance where the cops gunned this man down. They said Scott walked out of the entrance with a crowd. They described an officer shouting at Scott, then a quick succession of gunshots. The witnesses differed in their recollection of what one of the officers said. And of course, this always happens because you hear different stuff on TV. You get these things wrapped into your head. You never know what they say. One of them said, "I told you to stop. Stop!" Two other witnesses said they heard something like, "Drop it." A fourth witness said they heard, "Get down, put it down, get out of the way," something like that. A second anonymous witness said Sunday he saw Scott pull up his shirt and turn towards the shouting officers. Then he saw the man get shot, drop to his knees, and fall face first in front of the entrance. There wasn't even time for someone to react, the second witness said. The guy didn't pull a gun. There was no gun in his hand. There was no gun on the ground. The second witness said he was interviewed by homicide detectives and gave them the same account. The first anonymous witness also didn't see Scott make a threat. I certainly did not see the guy do anything with a gun that would threaten anybody, the first witness told him on Sunday. It appeared to me that if he had a gun on him, they were literally in his pocket or in his waist. The first witness also was interviewed by homicide detectives about the shooting. Now, Amesbury, who was the witness attorney, officer of the court, said he did not see the man get shot, but when I go around the corner, I see this guy laid out. I didn't see a gun. Amesbury's view of the shooting was blocked by stone pillars. He was not interviewed by police. That stinks that he was the one guy who's actually an attorney slash officer of the court who didn't actually see the entire thing. He saw the aftermath immediately after. Before the shooting, Scott was walking with a woman that three witnesses thought was his girlfriend. They said she became distraught after the shooting. The incident also left the witnesses shaken. Imagine that. I mean, you just saw three cops murder a guy. Well, why wouldn't that shake you? This is just incredible. All of these people around that metro, I'm sorry, metro is Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, just so you understand. It's just incredible, quote, with all these people around that metro would provoke something there, the second witness said. I don't want to second guess the police, but wouldn't it have been better to confront him out of his car? Well, probably. After the shooting, some people in the crowd panicked. An elderly woman was knocked down, cut her elbow in the chaos. Blah, da, da. Only Scott was struck by gunfire. Police said Scott had two handguns on him when he was shot. Goodman said Scott had a concealed weapons permit. His friend says that Scott was a safety freak about guns. He said that absolutely not in a million years would Scott be careless with them around others. The guy was a West Point graduate. He would understand this. He would understand not to pull a gun out in front of the cops. Now, Scott graduated from West Point in 1994 and was stationed for a time at Fort Hood, Texas, as a tank platoon leader. In 03, he graduated from Duke University in North Carolina with a master's degree in business administration. Friends said they noticed nothing strange about Scott in the days before the shooting. On Friday, Scott's vehicle was struck by another vehicle while he was rushing a pacemaker to Summerlin Hospital Medical Center. Scott was not injured in the collision, and a firefighter took the device from the crash scene to the hospital so it would get there in time. Friends were distraught and puzzled as to why police would murder Scott. He's a stand-up guy in the community, Goodman said. This guy is not somebody to put himself in a situation like that. His friend, who also sells medical devices, says Scott worked closely with patients in his job. He called Scott's job the pinnacle of the business. It's very, very sad, according to his friend. I'm shocked by it. It's the tragic loss of a great man. Okay, let me give you my two cents, because I used to be a patrol officer for Las Vegas Metro. I was raised in Vegas. I know how this stuff goes down. The homicide division for Las Vegas Metro is a really well-trained, excellent group of investigators who on several occasions have taken officer-involved shootings and done their best to make sure that things that were somewhat questionable became not quite so questionable during their investigation. Essentially, beginning, I don't necessarily want to use the word cover up, but maybe I will use the words that to describe what they do to the reports will, at all possible turns, favor the accounts of the cops. It is hardly an independent investigation. Hardly. Now, from reading all of this, I can read through the lines and tell you that this is most likely what happened. Eric Scott comes out of the store. I don't know what was going on inside the store. Maybe they were, you know, flopping around a bunch of furniture to see, you know, stuff like, check out this. Who knows what was going on inside the store? But the guy's walking out, and he's walking out calmly, and the cops shout at him. According to this captain, they had their guns drawn. We didn't hear any of that refuted in this news story by any of the witnesses. So, what probably happened was the guy was probably trying to do something very prudently by grabbing his shirt, lifting it up over his waistband to show that he had a gun being carried, probably appendix carry, which is a very popular mode of carry, with his other hand in the air and turning towards the gun, showing them, look, I've got a gun on me, it's all good, don't be surprised. And then the jumpy-assed cops, who already have their guns out, and I flat guarantee you have their fingers on the triggers from the ready position, point in, he turns, they see a gun, it's not in his hands, you have to look for the hands. But he has a gun, and when one shoots, the rest start shooting. Now, I was on a call where we got a call of a guy walking up the street with a gun in his waistband, not wearing a shirt. All right? So I'm in a car with another officer, and we get a call just after leaving lunch with a third officer. So these two cars, all three cops, we zoom up the road, see a guy fitting the description, and we go out on him. We come up on him from behind. We get out. I'm in the middle. Mark is on the right side of the car. The guy I was riding with, the other cop is on the driver's side of his car. I'm in the middle of the two cars now. We're all evenly spaced, all encompassing about a 90-degree angle, and I'm at about 120 degrees behind this guy. The cop to my left is directly behind him. The cop to my right is at about 90 degrees. Now, I'm the one who starts shouting the commands. We'd already arranged this in the car. Okay? So, we get out, we pull our guns, and we tell them, my command is, put your hands in the air and turn away from me. So what does he do? He reaches into his waistband, pulls out this device that looks like a gun, and turns towards us as he raises the gun up. Raises the gun up and out. So it sweeps, as he's turning, it sweeps across the chest of my partner and my chest, not quite to the other guy. Dave was the other guy's name. Not quite to the other guy, but sweeps right across us. Now, Dave was 15, 16, 17 year veteran. Mark, the guy I was with, 5 or 6 year veteran and on his way to SWAT. And, I mean, I had already gone through a lot of training, gun training, tactical training. So, you had three very well put together guys when it comes to their minds and understanding shooting and tactics and years on the job with Dave. So, we've got a good threesome of cops on this deal. So, rather than putting his hands in the air and turning away so that we can go up there, put him in cuffs and see what he's actually got. No. He grabs what's in his waist and turns towards us, sweeping this thing across the two of us. Mark and I. Not Dave, Mark and I. Well, I gotta tell you, I probably had about 80% of the trigger pull on the trigger at the moment he did this. Because I'm thinking this guy is gonna shoot. Now, here's one of the things. You want to be looking at your sights when you shoot, but you got to be looking at the hands of the bad guy before you can. So I'm looking at the bad guy. I have my muzzle covering meat, so if I have to shoot, it's going to hit. As it turns out, guys, it was a pneumatic drill, a silver drill that plugs into an air compressor. And it looks to the untrained eye like it could be a gun because it's got the shape. Well, you could hear my trigger reset after I noticed this was a drill. Mark noticed. Mark saw it had a better view. He didn't shoot. And I don't think Dave shot because Mark and I didn't shoot. But if any one of the three of us had pressed the trigger, you know the other ones would have figured, he saw something I didn't, let's back him up and start shooting. That's just the way it goes. It works that way in the field, in the military. It works that way on the street with cops. It takes one guy to not do his job and not protect this citizen to have all the cops dump him. That's how the cops in New York got in trouble for shooting this some guy, some unarmed Haitian immigrant, 40-something times about 10 years ago. One shot and all the rest followed. It was a volley of fire. It was a lead curtain headed downrange. In my case, in the story I just recounted, that did not happen. Well, as it turns out, we cuffed this guy, we took him into custody to hold him. It's like, look, you're walking around doing something really stupid. We just want to see who you are and if you're doing anything dumb or not. If everything's cool, we're going to give you this drill back and you can carry on with some advice to probably not carry it that way anymore and have a nice day. But now we're on a scene. We had our guns out. We're looking into something to find out what's going on. Well, as it turns out, this guy had warrants. So after we found out he had warrants, we go to search him. After we search him, I find a dirty hypodermic needle in his pocket and notice that this guy's left arm is tracked up. He's actually literally making patterns with his heroin needle on his arm. It's starting to look like kind of a snake. He's actually making patterns with it. And what really ticked me off, guys, before I searched his pockets, I asked him, do you have any guns, knives, other weapons, any drugs, anything of danger whatsoever that I might find on you? He said, nope, nothing at all. Are you sure? Think about it. What are in your pockets? Anything there? Nope. All right. So the first thing I start with is his wallet out of his right rear pocket. I move to his right front pocket. And what do I pull out of there? A dirty, heroin-laden hypodermic needle that's been in his body several times, wrapped up in a little piece of magazine paper that was torn and he wrapped it in. I could have easily stuck myself with his hypodermic needle. And as soon as I pull it out, he looks at me and his eyes basically say, F you. That's what his eyes say to me. Like, I was hoping you would have jabbed yourself with my needle. This guy was a dirty, filthy, nasty human being. So, of course, he got booked on all of that, too. The point to my story is, this guy literally turned and waved something across our chest rather quickly, and he did not get shot. The guy we're talking about, according to all the witness accounts, had no gun in his hand. What it sounds like, he was pulling his shirt up, showing a gun in his waistband as he's carrying a pendants carry. No hand on the gun. One cop decides, oh my God, he's got a gun, shoot him. He's exercising an inalienable, God-given, constitutionally protected right to carry a gun, shoot him. Great, thanks guys. You just murdered an upstanding citizen. One of the type of people that we would like to clone the sort of human being that they have become and insert that into tens of millions of people who are lacking basic human development and understanding of proper societal behavior. And the cops murder him. So what's going to happen with this deal? I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's going to go to the coroner's inquest, which is a secret little, card-carrying secret handshake club in Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas is. It'll go to the coroner's inquest, where a coroner's investigator will look at this. They'll hold a hearing, and the cops are going to be, it's going to be ruled as justifiable. There's three different ways you can do it. Justifiable, excusable, or criminal. Those are the only three. And only once in the history of Las Vegas Metro, in over 150 of these coroner's inquests, has only one, ever been ruled as criminal. All the rest, mostly justifiable, a couple, excusable. This will go down as justifiable only because the guy had a gun on his possession. That's all. And I am going to push for a statewide law in the next legislative session next year that every police-involved shooting, whether there's a death or not, goes to a grand jury. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Take me back inside.
the American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea. Right in the backyard of Chicago itself, America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
All right, guys, welcome back, welcome back. Had an issue with the ISDN for just a second, so we're doing segment five on Skype. Hopefully everything is going right through, and it's sounding good. I just wanted to get into something real quick before we close out today's show about Justice Clarence Thomas's opinion in the McDonald case. Now, it's no wonder that not a single other justice who made up the prevailing side in this case on different and more diffusing grounds offered any objection to the straight, undeviating route Clarence Thomas took in the common conclusion and in the majority opinion. While they were circumnavigating the issue, he cut right through them and emerged into the light. It's not just a landmark legal opinion. It's a history lesson that should be read by every student from of the continuing struggle to fulfill the Bill of Rights. Clarence Thomas sees that history, through the prevailing prism of the black man's struggle against both the legal garbage and distinguished scholars, and the outright terrorism of the Ku Klux Klan, and such in post-Civil War in America. In his opinion, Clarence Thomas touches on some of the more notorious massacres and lynchings endured by a people deprived of the means to defend themselves, which is the fate that awaits any unarmed people. But among the stories of persecution he relates, there is also the enduring hope of redemption. He says, quote, one man recalled the night during his childhood when his father stood armed at a jail until morning to ward off lynchers. The experience left him with a sense not of powerlessness, but of the possibilities of salvation that came from standing up to intimidation. Of arms and the man, Clarence Thomas now has anew. What this coming generation of legal scholars or just Americans with a historical consciousness will make of this landmark opinion of his, the one unexpected and literally refreshing part of this whole Supreme Court decision, will be up to them. For liberty always depends on what men will make of it. But the thrill his words engendered were palatable. Here's hoping generations of law students to come will feel it, respond to it, and recognize what his words have wrought. The 14th Amendment restored to its original meaning, glory, and strength. So that was a little piece that I wanted to read to you dealing with the McDonald case. When you get the opportunity, go to victoryshoot.org, guys. Check it out. It's going to be a big one. It's going to be one for the record books. I'd like to close by saying,
To those of you within our government, we will be watching you. Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for Ernie Hancock, coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.